road leading to a covered garage.
That was then.
They might have a different place for tonight.
As good as this? I doubt it. This place is solid gold.
There's no sign of life.
Not yet. I think that's the point. They get in and out real fast. It's a totally hidden location. Who pays attention to these places? Someone drives in here, they're invisible.
He turned and looked back. The truck from Jersey would come in from the east, the same way they had walked. Then it would loop around the garage and head back the other direction for the empty run home. Stackley would have headed west. The other guys like him could have headed either way. It was a secret rendezvous and a hidden highway interchange all in one. Solid gold. They walked up to where they thought Bramall and Mackenzie would come through the trees and found them just arriving. They did the tour again. Mackenzie said,
"Obviously I'm not the person to ask how we play this."
Sanderson said,
"Operationally, the soundest plan would be ambush the incoming vehicle halfway along the service road, after it leaves the highway but before it gets to the garage. One operation, maximum one round fired, maximum one enemy killed. Focused and efficient."
"How would we ambush the vehicle?"
"I don't know if we should."
"I don't follow."
Reacher said,
"We don't know what kind of vehicle it is, but it came out the factory gate, so it's probably an official pharmaceutical truck. I'm sure the boy detective discussed the matter with them. Lots of meetings and memos. The truck is probably locked. Maybe only the driver can open it. A combination or a special key. Your sister doesn't want to run the risk of having to beat it out of him."
"Would you?"
"The guy already took money to deliver to the wrong address. Clearly he's open to a negotiation. Fair exchange is no robbery."
"So which?"
Bramall said,
"There could be 10 or 12 guys picking up here. To get what they got, we would have to rob them all one by one on their way out of here, like the ticket booth in a parking lot. 12 robberies, one after the other, maybe a minute apart. I don't think we could do it. We have no choice."
"Rose? Like I said, the ambush chooses itself. Let's hope the truck is not locked."
"There's a third way," Reacher said. "The best of both worlds."
Chapter 45 Nakamura returned to the rest area because she ran out of options. It was a bad location, but maybe better than anywhere else. She pictured a panel van, shiny white. Where would it park to conduct its business? As far away as possible, surely, which meant somewhere on the far edges of the lot. Late in the evening, there were many empty rows. Folks liked to park as close as possible to the buildings. Why not? Why give themselves an extra walk? She cruised by in her pale blue car. She was right. The western edge of the lot was completely deserted, row after empty row. The eastern edge had just one lone car. It was parked with its grill tight up against the trees. It was a black SUV with a blue license plate. Illinois. She dialed her phone. She said, "Expedite a request for an out-of-state plate." In reply, she got a burst of static and a verbal okay. She read out the number. She kept the phone to her ear and parked next to the black SUV. It was a Toyota. She got out and checked it over. It was dusty. It had done some miles out west. It was hard to see inside because the windows were high and she was short. But it looked like folk were traveling. There were bags in the trunk. But why park there? She looked ahead at the trees and concluded a person could walk through them. But what for? Illicit activity was safe enough in the last row of the parking lot. No one needed to hide out in the woods. There was nothing on the other side until eventually the trees thinned out and the regular median started up again. Technically, a person could walk from there to the next rest area with grass under his feet all the way. Or was there a highway department maintenance depot in the way? She couldn't remember. There was one somewhere. They were the kind of places you never really paid attention to. There was static in her ear and a voice on her phone. It said, Illinois DMV lists that plate as a black Toyota Land Cruiser registered to Terrence Bramall at a Chicago business address. He describes himself as a private detective. Sanderson walked to her starting position and Reacher went with her. He wanted to know she was still chewing, or if not, whether that was a good thing or bad. She was still chewing, doing okay. He hoped she wasn't peaking too early. She had the Ruger Standard, the .22, two rounds in it. It was all she would take. Bramall had the Colt .45, three rounds in it. Mackenzie had the empty Springfield. Better than nothing. Like the man said, 90% of everything was striking a pose. Reacher said, Get the story ready for me. Sanderson said,
100 things could go wrong.
Not 100, he said. A couple dozen, maybe.
The arrest warrant was bullshit. I want you to know that, whatever. They were trying to shut him up.
You want me to know part of this story, but not all of it?
I want you to know that part, at least.
What was he trying to say?
Something he shouldn't.
Okay, Reacher said. Stay on the ball and tell me the rest later. You doing okay?
So far?
Good until when?
What time is it now?
Close to 10:30. She did the math in her head and she didn't answer. Reacher walked back to his own starting position, but before he got there, Bramall walked up with his phone, which was glowing green, with what was apparently a call in progress with the West Point Superintendent's office.
For you,
Bramall said. Reacher took the phone. He said, General? The soup said, Major? We're currently maneuvering, success or failure within 2 hours from now.
Do I want to know the details?
Probably not.
What are your chances?
Uncertain. It's a rules of engagement issue.
She got more scruples than you?
She could hardly have fewer. But there are things I won't do, and we have civilians with us.
Welcome to the modern army. You could come back and take a class.
She told me Porterfield's arrest warrant was bullshit.
What was your reaction to that?
She would say that. Wouldn't she?
Mine, too. But she appears to be right. My friends to the south got into the file, and there's nothing in it. It has to be phony.
No one knows the guy who swore it out. We looked him up, and the only match on the name was a guy in the press office in a Marine Corps medical battalion.
The way she talks, I think she feels Porterfield had some kind of a just cause going on. In which case, there must be a lot of files.
He was an unemployed veteran who had to change a dressing every day. If a guy like that gets a bug up his ass, he tells everyone about it. He writes letters to the newspaper and calls his congressman every day, and then the White House and the talk shows and every law enforcement agency he can think of. His name must crop up everywhere. I want to know. She might never tell me.
How is she doing?
Pretty good, all things considered.
Is her attitude okay?
In what way?
Are you free to talk?
Sure, Reacher said.
Why I wanted to call. We found a sideways reference to a document in a medical ethics case. An army psychiatrist had published a paper. The charge was he had failed to adequately conceal the identity of his subject. The paper was about a woman officer who had been grievously wounded in the face. During an on-site inspection, she wasn't required to attend. She was standing in for another officer, purely as a personal favor. The operation was nothing to do with her. She was there because some other asshole had another appointment, which, upon investigation, turned out to be extremely unworthy. The guy killed himself when the questions started. Turned out he was getting jacked off by some Afghan whore, while the most beautiful woman in the army was getting maimed. The paper was about her psychological struggle to see herself as wounded in the line of duty. The woman was Rose Sanderson. It was while she was still in the hospital. She said the publicity upset her. She hasn't mentioned it, Reacher said. It's a factor, the soup said. She feels betrayed. At 11 o'clock, the compound was still pitch dark and silent, which Reacher expected. His theory allowed for maybe 20 minutes of furtive gathering, and then frantic action at midnight, and then nothing again. So he wasn't worried, not yet. Not unless he was completely wrong, and a bunch of guys was assembling somewhere else entirely, miles away right then, slapping each other on the shoulder, opening their trunk lids and their tailgates wide, exposing hungry space inside? Possible. He waited. 11:30 was just the same, pitch dark and silent. Still okay. Still consistent, still logical, still expected, but getting close. All the well-known sayings. The crunch was coming. The money shot. The rubber was about to meet the road. For the first time in his life, he paid close attention to what his body was doing. He felt stress building inside him, and he felt an automatic response, some kind of a primitive biological leftover that converted it to focus and strength and aggression. He felt his scalp tingle and an electric flow pass through his hands to his fingers. He felt his eyesight grow vivid. He felt himself get physically larger and harder and faster and stronger. He knew Sanderson would be feeling the same things. He wondered how they mixed with fentanyl. He hoped she was doing okay. Then he saw headlights on the service road. Chapter 46. The headlights were dim and yellow, which meant it was an old vehicle, and they were at a modest height and a regular width apart, which meant the old vehicle was normal size, not a giant pickup truck, not a huge SUV. It drove up to the building, and the wash from its lights on the siding showed it to be a sedan maybe 20 years old, shaped like a slug, dull paint, an indeterminate dark color, no hubcaps, a snapped-off antenna. It backed up and parked neatly out of the way, and a guy got out. He could have been 50, thick around the waist, hair plastered to his scalp with oil. He was wearing blue jeans and a gray sweatshirt with a word on it, a brand name, perhaps. He walked over to the roll-up door and did something with a key. Then he squatted like a weightlifter and hauled on the bottom lip, and the door came clattering up, getting faster, as if a counterbalance was kicking in. The guy walked into the garage, and a minute later there was a muted repeat of the same noise as the far door clattered up. Inside on the left were ranks of huge yellow snowplows. On the right,
was empty space. Someone had chalked diagonal parking bays on the concrete floor. They were numbered 1 through 10. 1 was at the far end, 10 was at the near end. The guy in the sweatshirt walked back to his car. He leaned in and got a clipboard from the passenger seat. It had a pen on a string, some kind of a list. The guy walked back to the garage and took up station near the entrance. There will be a guard at the door. The guy took out a handgun and checked the chamber. 11:41 in the evening. 4 minutes later, there were more headlights on the service road, higher, wider, and brighter than the guy's old sedan. It was a Dodge Durango SUV. It drove toward the garage door. It stopped next to the guy. The window came down. Something was said. The guy checked his clipboard and waved the truck inside. It parked at an angle in a chalked-out bay. A minute later, a rusted Silverado drove up the road. No better condition than Stackley's old thing, but no camper shell. It had a flat vinyl cover on the bed. Then an old black four-wheel drive showed up. Both parked inside. By 5 minutes to midnight, 9 of the 10 chalk bays were occupied. Only number 5 was empty. The guy in the sweatshirt looked relaxed about it. Rules were rules. The other 9 guys waiting next to their trucks looked happy about it. More to go around. The guy in the sweatshirt checked his watch. His phone rang. He listened. He called out, 2 minutes, guys. It's nearly here. 2 minutes later, a white panel van came charging up the road, going fast, then braking hard. It stopped and waited. It had New Jersey plates. The guy in the sweatshirt gave it a sign, and then he ran inside the building. The van turned and drove along the outside of the garage all the way front to back. It turned again, tight and awkward, and nosed in through the rear door, the opposite way from everyone else. It stopped level with the truck in bay number 1. The guard ran up inside and met it there. The driver got out. Which all changed the plan. Afterward, Reacher was mad he hadn't read more into the chalk numbers on the floor. At first, he thought they might represent geographical regions, or length of service, some tradition or perk of the job, or nothing at all. Maybe they were there just for the fun of it. You chalk some bays, you might as well chalk some numbers, to make it look professional. But they were a priority order, some kind of a status ladder. Maybe number 1 was the guy with the best volume, like salesman of the week, like a prize, part of which was the right to a fast getaway. First served, first out of there. A decent incentive. There were a dozen different mechanical ways to make that happen, all kinds of maneuvers, but by far the simplest was to bring the panel van in through the rear door. Reacher was at the front door. He had foreseen that the guard and the driver from the panel van would be side by side at the start of the process. The plan was, as soon as the driver opened the van, unsuspectingly, voluntarily, without having been beaten or coerced in any way at all, so that everyone's conscience was entirely clear, then Reacher would fire a 9mm round over their heads into the booming space beyond to freeze them, to claim possession of the panel van, whereupon Sanderson would announce her presence from behind, and they would all glance back and see a mysterious figure pointing a handgun, and any spark of early trouble would snuff out right then. Only an expert would spot the Ruger for a .22. Only an expert with X-ray vision would know it was nearly empty. He thought the plan would work. First the guard and the driver, and then the other guys. two different categories of people. He felt the sequence was important. He was at the wrong end of the garage. Everything was turned around. He was now Sanderson. She was now him. With adrenaline and fight hormones and fentanyl, or maybe half fentanyl and half withdrawal and pain and discomfort and the sweats and the shakes. Right then, she would be watching the driver, waiting for him to open up, a combination or a special key. Or maybe not. Maybe just a regular door, in which case it would all happen faster. The .22 was quiet for a firearm, but still a lot louder than anything else in life. In the echoing space, a .22 would do the job just fine. If she took over. If she did it. Nothing yet. Still nothing. Maybe it was a long combination. Like a computer. All kinds of characters, uppercase, lowercase, numbers and symbols. Nothing. Then a colossal gunshot explosion and a brutal bang as a bullet hit a beam overhead. Everyone froze. Up ahead, she stepped out and said, "Stay where you are." Like he would have. Behind them, he stepped out and said, "Nobody move." Like she would have. They glanced his way. He had the Smith aimed low at their waists. He had learned that angle worried people. Some kind of an old animal instinct. Up ahead, she shook her head. They were turned around. The next lines were his. He used his MP voice. He said, "Remove all cell phones and firearms from pockets, holsters, and other places of concealment. Place them on the floor at your feet. Do not get cute with me. In a moment, I will search you. If I find a further firearm, I will shoot you through the back of the knee with it. If I find a cell phone, I will shoot you through the back of the knee with my own firearm. These are promises as solemn as government debt. Please take a moment to think about it. We're not cops or federal agents. This is purely private business. For you, just a temporary nuisance. So weigh it up. You can walk the rest of your life, or you can use a wheelchair. Figure out what works best for you." 11 guys, 11 phones, 12 guns. The guard had a small .38 on his ankle. Mackenzie stepped out to collect them. She was pointing the empty Springfield. She looked like an afternoon movie, the beautiful queen of the underworld. They all stared. Reacher told them to kick their guns and their phones toward her. She picked them all up one by one, and she put them in a bag she found in the panel van. It had a cheerful logo, in greens and blues, like the grass and the sky. Reacher and Sanderson herded all 11 guys into bay number 5, a tight fit. Like on the stairs, getting out of the ball game, trapped between two slab-sided trucks. Reacher and Sanderson stood off at 45-degree angles, face on, guns leveled. Not operationally necessary. Either one of them would have been effective, but two had a calming effect. It kept unwise thoughts to a minimum, and therefore casualties. It was a humanitarian deployment of resources. The modern army. At first, he thought it was working. The 11 guys were unusually subdued. They were stunned, quiet, defeated, somehow shaken, somehow demoralized, somehow sickened. Then he realized. Sanderson's hood was still peeled back. Behind them, in the corner of his eye, he saw Bramall reverse the Toyota through the same door the van had used and maneuver it backward, straight in line with the panel van, the tailgate close to the van's rear doors. He saw Mackenzie start shoveling boxes across, from one vehicle to the other, white and crisp and shiny. Lots of them. Bramall lent a hand. They worked hard together, box after box. Space became an issue. He saw them tossing bags out of the trunk over into the back seat. He stepped back a pace and looked left and right along the row of vehicles. He liked the look of the Dodge Durango best. It was a regular shape. It looked like it would have familiar controls. He pointed at it. He said, "Whose is that?" Some guy shuffled. Reacher said, "Are the keys in it?" The guy nodded. "Gas?" The guy nodded.
"Good to go here,"
Bramall called out from behind. "Okay," Reacher said. "We know what we're doing. By the numbers now. 1, 2, 3, and out of here." Step one was Mackenzie visiting every vehicle except the Durango, including the guard's old car outside, and adding all the keys to her bag. Most of the cars were old enough to hotwire, but the pharmaceutical van was a brand-new Mercedes with a chip in the key. It was going nowhere, which was good. The boy detective needed to see it, sitting there stranded, inert, caught out, and shamefaced. It explained everything all by itself. It was the master clue. Step two was Mackenzie and Bramall getting in the Toyota and driving away, which they did. Step three was Reacher coming close and central with the Smith aimed two-handed, low at their waists or lower, and then Sanderson backing off, step by cautious step toward the Durango, feeling one-handed behind her for the handle, getting in, starting up. She backed out of the angled slot and then couldn't go forward because of the panel van in the way, so she reversed all the way out through the front door and was gone. Reacher waited on his own. 11 guys penned up. He felt them stir, a flicker of anger at themselves at first. 11 to 1? Ridiculous. What were they? Pussies? Which was a bad kind of thing to think. They were going to make trouble for themselves. He had seen it before. Sooner or later, he would have to shoot one of them in the leg to get their attention. It would be their own fault. Behind him in the corner of his eye, he saw Sanderson back the Durango in through the same door the panel van had used. Now she was on the right side of it and facing in the right direction. 10 yards from him, he heard the transmission clunk from reverse back to drive, engine idle and foot on the brake, ready to go. He backed away, raising his aim a little as he went, but not much, randomly scouting side to side, to the guy on the left, to the guy on the right, then back to center mass, getting further away, step by backward step, hearing the Durango's passenger door squeal open behind him, no doubt Sanderson leaning across inside. He got there and backed into the seat, still with the Smith held level. But the guys had given up. No weapons, no phones, no transportation. They were already thinking ahead about how to get the hell out before the hammer came down.
"Go!"
Reacher said. Sanderson hit the gas, and she jinked the wheel twice, first right, then left, and she met the start of the westbound ramp doing about 60 miles an hour. Chapter 47. Sanderson eased off a beat to let a guy one lane over get well out of the way, and then she merged on the highway and crept back to 60. 4.5 minutes to the rest area. The car felt rough and noisy, not up to Bramall's standards, but possibly better than her ancient Bronco. She said,
"How much did we get?"
The thing that mattered most. "More than 2 weeks' worth," he said, That's for damn sure. You owe me the story now.
I did all the hard work.
Doesn't matter. You said you would tell me the story if we won tonight. No difference who did the work.
When I've seen it, she said. When I've seen more than 2 weeks' worth.
It's way more.
I want to bathe in it.
You should. You did well tonight.
Thank you.
Are you still doing well?
Did you see the way those guys looked at my sister?
Yes, Reacher said.
Did you see the way they looked at me?
Yes, Reacher said. I saw.
That's how I'm doing.
They pulled off again, just a short hop into the rest area. They rolled past the gas and the diesel and the fast food and the highway patrol and the highway department weighbridge, all the way to the chain motel, where Bramall had scouted 2 main advantages. It had private parking in back, so the Toyota would be hidden from casual view, and it was so absurdly close to the scene of the crime that no one would think to look there. They were in South Dakota. There was infinite space all around. Every instinct would be to search the far end of a radius that was growing by 60 miles every hour. No one would look close to home. Sanderson drove around the back and found the Toyota waiting. Bramall and McKenzie were standing one on either side of the tailgate, which was open. They had been tidying the load, which was spectacular. There were dozens and dozens of boxes. They were stacked in a block, a yard high and a yard wide and a yard deep. There were brand names and pictures. There were quantities. There were 10s and 20s and 50s and 100s over and over again. One box had 20 packs of 20 patches, some kind of pharmacy size, 400 items right there.
More than 2 weeks, Sanderson said.
She leaned in and pulled out a box. She opened it up and took out a foil pack the size of a fat playing card. 20 patches. She put it in her pocket. The richest woman in the world. The new gold standard for affluence. An addict with more than one hit. She turned to Reacher and said,
"Now I'll tell you this story."
"Later," he said. "First I'm going to pay Arthur Scorpio a visit."
"I'm coming with you," she said. "Scorpio has a place in the story."
They trawled through Mackenzie's bag and found the phone they had taken from the guard at the door. There was an old batch of text messages from 3 days before, ending with the guard telling Scorpio, "All good tonight, including the new Billy." The current batch was not as happy, and it was very one-sided. Since 12:15, Scorpio had been sending increasingly frequent and urgent demands for information. "What is going on? Must hear back from you immediately." Reacher said, "Tell him there was a delay. Tell him the guy will come over to the laundromat and explain in person as soon as he can. Write it so it sounds like him." Mackenzie did the texting. She seemed most at home with it. Sanderson traded her last round Ruger for Bramall's 3-round Colt. Then she got back in the Durango with Reacher, and they drove away. Gloria Nakamura saw the whole thing through the trees. In the end, she had figured the Toyota was parked where it was for the same reason everyone else was parked where they were. Why give themselves an extra walk? The folks from the Toyota had wanted to hike the other way, not toward the restrooms, but into the trees, toward nothing. Unless the maintenance depot was there, which it had to be, or else who would want to hike in that direction? Circular logic, but it made sense to her. She followed. She stopped 10 feet short. She saw Bigfoot. She saw Terrence Brammel from Chicago, the private investigator who had taken her table in the breakfast place 2 times. She saw a pretty woman. She saw a second woman, horribly disfigured. Immediately she knew this was the owner of the ring. She sensed it. The ring she had worn herself just briefly. West Point 2005. The Black Stone. She watched. Brammel and the normal woman walked back through the trees. They passed 20 feet from her, but they didn't notice. Then nothing happened for nearly an hour. Then vehicles started to show up, and finally the white panel van, New Jersey plates, fast and furious, just as she had predicted, running wild, technically not there at all, erased from the record. Then there was a gunshot, and the black Toyota showed up again and drove in and drove out, and then a Dodge Durango, and then it all went quiet again, until about a dozen different guys crept out and started milling around. They looked sheepish. She stepped out of the trees with her badge in one hand and her gun in the other. They ran, hard and fast, in 11 different directions. She called it in, but she knew it was hopeless. The highway belonged to the state troopers, not the PD's traffic division. Plus, late at night, any number of guys could run across all 3 lanes undetected, and then they could disappear beyond the shoulder to either the north or the south, into space so big it was effectively infinite. They were gone. She looked at the empty panel van and the 8 parked vehicles, and then she walked back through the trees and drove back to town. She wanted to see what Scorpio was doing. Sanderson and Reacher took the 4-lane south past Klinger's restaurant. She was chewing steadily all the way. Not partying or bathing yet. She was maintaining. She was getting herself where she wanted to be, and she was keeping herself there. He thought the huge quantity they had gotten from the panel van had changed her. He guessed part of being an addict was always being anxious. The next buck, the next hit, the next day, the next hour. She was no longer anxious. She would not be anxious for a very long time. Maybe ever again, if it worked out with the sister. So was she still an addict? Not the same way. Now it was all upside. The highs. Literally, and none of the lows. He could see the highs were worth having. Her face was not expressive, it didn't work that way. But her eyes were alive, and her body. She looked like she was having the best day of her life, without a near-fatal dose. Once necessary, maybe, to obliterate how bad it was for the other 12 hours of the day, but not any more. Now she could take it easy. Maybe she would be okay. Not his area of expertise. He said, "The soup told me why you were on the road outside the small town." She said, "I told you." "You told me you were representing the support operation." "Representing is a real $5 word. Maybe you could use it if you were asked to stand in by a senior officer. But you were already a major. We didn't need a colonel to figure out how to haul ass up a hill, so there was no senior officer, which makes it a weird choice of word." She was quiet for a moment. Then she said, "How did the soup know?"
"A shrink wrote a paper."
"He saw it?"
"He's been looking for you."
"Bullshit."
"He's calling in favors."
"For me?"
"He said you felt betrayed."
"By the shrink." He meant by the situation. Again, she was quiet. She said, I was in the hospital a long time, and I got to know a lot of people, missing an arm or a leg. Believe me, no one had it easy. But I hated those guys. They wore shorts. They could make the best of it. I would have been okay with a leg, even for doing a favor. I was overseas 5 times. Some shit was going to happen. Even an arm. But not my face. You saw how those guys looked at me. Reacher said nothing. She said, they wrote it down wrong. All they did was check a box. I never felt betrayed. Truth is, I felt unlucky. Literally, for the first time ever. At first, I didn't even know what it was. It was new to me. It was like getting a lifetime of bad luck all in one day. Every rotten thing. Of course, the guy who asked me to go for him was out catching a disease. He had to be. It was inevitable. I'm surprised he wasn't doing something worse. He said, now tell me Porterfield's story. She ducked her head and looked up at the street signs. She said, do you know where we are? He said, we make a right up ahead, then a left somewhere.
I'm going to pull over.
Why?
To tell you the story. Before we get there.
Nakamura eased to a stop on the cross street and then rolled forward until her view was perfect. Scorpio's back door was open. She could see the rim of light. She turned the engine off. She got out of the car and walked halfway there. The Supreme Court said if she was reasonably sure a crime was afoot in a public place, then she could intervene without a warrant. But Scorpio's back office was not a public place. The court said, therefore, she would need evidence tantamount to an emergency. Gunshots, or screams, or cries for help. The alley was silent. She crept closer. She heard Scorpio's voice, talking low, a composed sentence, a monologue. He was leaving a message. He sounded worried. He wanted answers. The guard at the gate, no doubt. His man on the spot. Who couldn't answer. Reacher had taken their phones. She had heard him, even in the trees. She had absolutely believed he would shoot them through the back of the knee. She crept closer. Now Scorpio was off the phone. There was no discernible sound at all. Maybe a low hum, maybe the noise of a fan. Certainly no gunshots or screams or cries for help. She crept closer. She put her eye to the gap. No angle. She put her fingertips on the door and pushed it open. Sanderson pulled over in a strip mall lot. She put the lever in park, but she kept the engine running. The Durango was full of gas. It was ready for a long trip somewhere. A sales trip. Idaho, maybe, or Washington State. She said, turns out there are a lot of nerves in the groin.
Who knew? Reacher said.
Cy was in pain all the time. Also addicted, of course. At first he got treatment direct from the Marine Corps. Then they stopped prescribing. No reason was given. At first he thought it was medical caution. These were powerful opiates, after all. But he needed them. He argued about it, but it got him nowhere. So he started doctor shopping. He drove all over. Then he started buying, which was easy enough. Back then there was plenty to go around, which made him mad. Every other faucet was wide open. Why was the Corps being cautious? He got back to them. They let something slip.
Turned out it wasn't caution about prescribing. Their inventory was all screwed up. They were running out.
Someone was stealing.
Sy made it his life's work to find out who, on behalf of himself and his brother Marines. He was made for the job. He was already buying, after all. He was already in the network. All he had to do was poke around a little. Eventually, he figured it out and wrote it up and sent it to the Defense Intelligence Agency.
Why them?
He had a theory. DIA spanned all the services. Better than sending it direct to the Marine Corps, they might bury it.
What happened?
We waited. We figured 5 or 6 days. The mails are slow from here. But he was sure they would get back to us immediately. What actually happened was we heard nothing for 6 months. Then he got the arrest warrant.
Someone was covering his ass.
That's what Sy thought. He gave it up, there and then. You win some, you lose some. You can't fight City Hall. We went up to the high woods because it was the start of spring. The first tiny shoots were out. He was happy as can be. He was an East Coast guy, really, quite reserved in his nature. But he was messing around that day and chewing on a stick and pretending to be a mountain man. We lay down on the ground. We had stuff in our pockets. A day like that, we both knew we were going to chase it. We were going to hit it hard. We were a couple who shared a hobby. We wanted to make it epic together.
What happened?
He died.
Nakamura pushed the door open. 6 inches, 8, 10, 12. She leaned in the room.
Scorpio had his back to her. He was sitting alone at a long bench covered with humming computers.
Tower units, screens, keyboards, mice. The room was hot. A fan was running. She took out her badge and her gun. She pushed the door all the way open. Scorpio heard it, or felt the air, or sensed her presence. He turned around.
"Stay where you are,"
she said.
"Let me see your hands."
He said, "You're trespassing."
"You're committing a crime."
"You're harassing me."
She took a step and raised her gun. She said, "Face down, on the floor."
He said, "You're making a fool of yourself. I'm doing my accounts after a long, hard day, so I can pay my taxes to pay your wages, one of the many burdens a small businessman bears."
"You're hacking pharmaceutical industry security, which is supervised by the federal government. Are they going to find Russian software? In which case, you're in a lot of trouble."
"I run a laundromat."
"The laundromat of the future. It looks like IBM in here. But your system just crashed. Check your GPS. Your panel van is stuck in a snowplow shed. Reacher took the key and everything else."
Scorpio went quiet. She put her badge away and took out her handcuffs. Then it all fell apart. Behind her, a guy walked through the open door with 2 go-cups of coffee from the convenience store. Black coat, black sweater, black pants, black shoes. More than 6 feet tall, a bruise on his neck. She had seen him before. Scorpio hit her in the back of her head, and she sprawled on the floor, and her gun went clattering away. She was dazed for a second, and felt herself being mauled and manhandled, and then she came to sitting on the floor, cuffed to a table leg, with her own handcuffs. Her skirt was up. She pulled it down one-handed. Her bag was gone, with her phone. Scorpio asked her, "What did you mean, everything else?" She said,
All of it.
The guy in black said, "Want me to go check it out?"
"We'll both go,"
Scorpio said. He looked at the alley door, at the inner door, at Nakamura.
"Bring the car to the front," he said. "I'll go out that way. We'll leave her right here."
The guy in black hustled out. Scorpio locked the alley door. He sat down and stared at his screen. Nakamura said,
"You're out of business." "No," he said. "I'll never be out of business. It's about moving on, that's all. One door closes, another door opens. Nothing lasts forever. I'll get what I need somewhere else. I always did before."
He left her there, sitting on the floor, handcuffed to the table. He turned out the lights. He stepped through the inner door to the laundromat. He closed the door behind him. The office went pitch dark. She heard the door lock from the other side. Then immediately she heard the street door open. Not Scorpio going out too soon. He was still 30 feet away. It was someone else coming in. The guy in black, presumably, with the car. But then she heard a muffled voice. Familiar. She thought it said, "What have you got in your pockets?" Sanderson said,
"Afterward, I realized he wasn't chewing on a stick, or just a stick. It was to hide himself chewing on something else, too. He had started the party early. He was going for the big OD. One fatal dose on the walk up the hill, and another when we got there. He hated his life. The thing with the DIA kept him going, but that was over now. They had closed ranks against him. He gave up. He decided this time when he knocked on the gates, if they opened for him, he would go in."
Reacher said nothing.
"And why not?"
she said.
"It was the end of everything. He had no money, which was different for him. Like me being unlucky. I watched him go. He started out good. He was happy as could be. I guess he knew what was coming. He was lying on his back with the smell of pine all around. His breathing got slower and slower. Then it stopped. That's how it was."
"I'm sorry."
"I was too. For myself. For him. I was happy. It was for the best, like people say. I left him there. He loved those hillsides. He loved the animals there. I packed my stuff and drove home."
"What was the black bag burglary for?"
"His copy of the report, in the desk drawer. The first place anyone would look."
"What was in the report?"
"Old-fashioned cash at the supply depot door. A colonel in a Marine Corps medical battalion was selling stuff to Arthur Scorpio. That's how Scorpio did it 2 years ago. Different now. But back then, Cy was buying the stuff he should have been getting all along. It was weird. I guess the colonel saw the file and took care of the problem behind the scenes."
"Scorpio knew Sai's name, too," Reacher said. "He gave it to me as a decoy."
"Maybe the colonel told him."
"Or maybe he told the colonel. If the roofer saw things, then Billy did, too. Maybe Billy told Scorpio, and Scorpio told the colonel. The investigation hadn't started yet. Now it never would. The guy shut it down with the phony warrant. I think that's the only way the timing works."
"You're saying Scorpio sold him out?"
"We should get going," Reacher said. "Time to pay him a visit." Chapter 48 Sanderson and Reacher rolled through dark, tomb-quiet streets, slow but never stopping, to the corner with the convenience store, where up ahead they saw a black sedan slowing at the curb, Arthur Scorpio's car. The same car that had picked him up outside the restaurant with the chromium foam. The same guy in it. Last seen gasping for breath on the laundromat floor. Sanderson stopped tight behind the Lincoln, and Reacher caught the guy on the sidewalk, halfway to the laundromat door. He hit him once, just a loosener, and the guy took a knee on the concrete and flapped a hand in surrender. Turned out he had been sent to bring the car around, ahead of a trip to a highway department maintenance depot, where there was a problem of some kind. Mr. Scorpio would be out in a moment. Reacher put the guy in the Lincoln's trunk, which was big enough for two of him, the old square design. Then he headed for the laundromat door and got there just as Scorpio came out from the office. Tall and bony, maybe 50, gray hair, black suit, white shirt, no tie. He closed the door behind him and locked it and turned back around. Reacher stepped inside. He said, "What have you got in your pockets?" Scorpio stared, didn't answer. "You told Billy to shoot me," Reacher said. "And then the new guy, same thing." No answer. "They didn't get the job done," Reacher said, "as you can see. So, what happens next?" Scorpio said, "It was nothing personal." Then he glanced at the street. "Your boy ain't coming," Reacher said. "It's just you and me now."
"It was business. What would you have done?"
"You sold outside Porterfield, too."
"He was a nuisance. He had to go."
Reacher heard a faint metallic sound in the office. Maybe a machine counting quarters. He said, "What was the colonel's name?" Scorpio didn't answer. Reacher went to hit him. Scorpio yelped,
"Bateman!"
like a sneeze. "Thank you," Reacher said. Nakamura heard Scorpio say Porterfield was a nuisance and had to go, which was a confession of some sort. It had legal gravity. She was torn between shouting out and keeping quiet. In the end, she compromised by clinking her handcuff against the table leg, to no effect. No one busted down the door. Then Scorpio shrieked what could have been, "Bite me?" And then she heard nothing more except grunts and gasps and the scrape of heels on the floor. And then the slow roar of a tumble dryer growling and droning around and around with a heavy load. Thumping and bouncing. Sanderson parked alongside the black Toyota to further shield it from view. Her room was next to Reacher's. She said good night and went in. He went in to his. He sat on the bed. He heard her through the wall, moving around. Then he heard her go out again. There was a knock at his door. He opened up. Her hood was still back. She said,
"I guess things have changed about what I'm likely to do. You could give me my ring now. It would be safe."
"Come in," he said. She sat on the bed where he had. He took the ring from his pocket. The gold filigree, the black stone, the tiny size. A long journey for a small item. She took it. She said,
"Thank you again."
"You're welcome again." She was quiet a long moment. She said,
"You know the weirdest
thing about this situation? He said.